So I want to put the question out to all of you. Everybody, just say it out loud. What is the answer? What emotion do you think characterizes the Old Testament prophets? Frustration, that's a good one. Anyone else? Anger. Oh, I think it's anger. Don't the prophets strike you as kind of cranky guys? Don't they? Let me give you a few examples. Amos, listen to him for a moment. Amos says, "Hear this word, you cows of Bashan who oppress the poor and crush the needy." That's kind of an irritable thing to say, wouldn't you say? Right? Isaiah. Thank you, Pastor Ralph, last week for the little snapshot into Isaiah. Isaiah says, "Stop bringing your meaningless offerings. Your incense is detestable to me. I cannot bear your evil assemblies." He was talking about worship, by the way. That's kind of an irritable thing to say, wouldn't you think? Micah puts it like this: "Should you not know justice, you who hate good and love evil?" Listen to this metaphor. Whew. Listen to what he says. "Who tear the skin from my people and the flesh from their bones, who eat my people's flesh, who strip off their skin, who break their bones into pieces, who chop them up like meat for the band." Whew. That's a little over the top, don't you think? Not only do they use angry words, but they often resort to what we would consider shock tactics, right? Shock tactics that sometimes would be considered a little bizarre. I mean, think about it. Hosea marries a hooker to show how unfaithful God's people have been to God. Ezekiel eats food that is cooked over human excrement to show how contaminated the lives of God's people have become. Jeremiah digs up a filthy, buried, bloodied, unwashed undergarment, and he uses it as an object lesson to show how repellent people's behavior had become. The prophets are filled with all kinds of stuff like this, and we don't like this very much, do we? I mean, let's be honest. When we talk about the Old Testament prophets, oftentimes we just want to put them in the closet and have them be quiet. We like happy books and happy movies, books that make us feel good, right? You know, we like Nicholas Sparks books and movies, right? So why should we read what the prophets put out? Well, for one thing, it was in the Bible, right? We need to read the prophets because it's part of the Bible. Think about it. It would not be a good thing to get to heaven and have Obadiah walk up to you and say, "How did you like my book?" He laughs. "You're probably not alone." And then we might say, "Well, I didn't really read it. It was a little difficult to find. It was in a bad location." And in spite of all that, it was kind of whiny. But there's more to it than that. There's a reason why God chose 17 books of the Bible to be books of the prophets. There's a really good reason for the anger of the prophets. I'll explain why in kind of a picture. Imagine that you're listening to somebody sing, and they're singing really off key, getting really pitchy. You know what I'm saying? Anybody can relate? You know, they're singing badly off key, and they're singing out loud, and some of you don't have to imagine because maybe you've just been going through that this morning. Now, if you're musically insensitive, if you have what they call a tin ear, it doesn't bother you very much. If you have a tin ear and the singer is maybe your grandchild and it brings you great pleasure, but if you're musically sensitive, maybe you have perfect pitch, it's a different story. It's really painful because you know what the song could sound like, right? You know what the song should be. You know how far off it is, and you look at Grandma and you wonder, how can she stand listening to this? It's painful to you. You're in agony. Now you imagine listening to that same off pitch. There's some musicians over here. I think you can relate to what I'm saying. Just imagine if you listen to that same off pitch sound, minute after minute, hour after hour, day after day, and year after year. You see, we read the Old Testament prophets and we think, what's the big deal? Why are they getting so worked up about all of this? Because to us, to most people in this room, society isn't really that bad. I mean, we live in America. Things are really going pretty well for me. I know there's violence out in the world. There's a lot of violence in most of the large cities of this country, for sure. Yeah, I read about it sometimes, and it's regrettable. But as long as it doesn't touch my life, as long as it doesn't touch my home, my neighborhood, well, I'd prefer just to not have to think about it. Thank you very much. Certainly, it couldn't be connected to anything that I'm doing, to my indifference or my apathy or to my lack of love. Cheating and stealing go on every day. I know it does. You talk about some of the many large stores that have been put out of business. You pick any newspaper on any given day, you go online to a website and you read all about these historic stores in San Francisco and Los Angeles and Portland and Seattle, just to name a few of the many merchants in our large cities that are moving out of town and shutting down their doors. And you think, well, it's just the way things are. That's what it takes. Close to 10,000 children die from hunger and hunger-related causes each and every day. Did you know that? In most of our larger cities of the world, children are born every day into ghettos and slums and barrios. They are born into oftentimes abject poverty. They will grow up without access to important things like education and health care and housing. But you say, they're not my kids. Maybe their parents did something to bring that on. So what if ancient Palestine, the poor, were getting ripped off? Where is it any different? I mean, why go off on the deep end like this? Somebody shades the truth a little bit for profit. Somebody ignores the poor. Somebody gets a little wrapped up in their own comfort. Somebody gets a little careless about remembering those in need, and the prophets just blow their top like the world is coming to an end. Did you know that Jesus, who the scriptures say was also a prophet, Jesus says in Matthew chapter 25 that each and every time that somebody in prison doesn't get visited, each and every time somebody who is hungry doesn't get fed, each and every time that somebody is naked and doesn't get clothed, Jesus says that he is the one who experienced it from us. Jesus says he dies a little bit inside every time that happens. And we think to ourselves, what's the big deal? I'll tell you what the big deal is. To the prophets has been given this crushing burden of looking at the world and seeing what God sees. He sees rich people trying to get richer and looking the other way while poor people die and thinking that God is really pleased with their lives and the world is really going pretty well. Every one of the prophets learned this truth, this fundamental truth about the human race. We really don't want to know the truth, do we? We do not want to know what sin has done in our lives. We are just deeply vested in not getting it. We do not want to know what sin has done to our lives and our hearts, to our compassion, to our generosity. We do not want to know what it has done to the world around us. We do not want to know, because if we did, it would make us really uncomfortable. The prophet Micah, our focus today, puts it like this. If a liar and deceiver comes and says, I will prophesy for you plenty of wine. Brent, you talked about wine this morning in the Sabbath school lesson. If a liar and deceiver comes and says, I will prophesy for you plenty of wine, he would be just the prophet for this kind of people. You hear what he's saying? I mean, let's ask the question, what is wine made to do? Does it make you more comfortable, or does it make you more alert? Okay, I understand this is a Woodside Seventh-day Adventist church. Many of you are Seventh-day Adventists. Many of you cannot answer that question, but maybe a few of you can. But just take a shot in the dark, okay? What do wine and beer do? Do they make you more alert or more comfortable? That's not a rhetorical question. More comfortable. That's why Micah says what he says. That's what people want. They want to be comfortable. They want to just be left alone. Thank you very much. To paraphrase one of the greatest students of the prophets in the 20th century, he's one of my favorite authors in the Old Testament, Abraham Heschel. This is what Heschel writes. The shallowness of our moral comprehension, the incapacity to sense the depth of misery caused by our own failures, is a simple fact of human nature, which no explanation can justify or hide. Because events that horrified and appalled the prophets are everyday occurrences in our world, all around us, he writes. And we don't want to know, and we don't want to hear, and we don't want to see. And he continues. And we don't want anybody to tell us about human misery and injustice, because it might disturb our comfort. Listen to what he says. We just get used to our world like you get used to wearing a watch after a while, like you used to get used to stuff that you never get fixed around the house after a while. We just don't notice it anymore. You see, the prophets noticed. That was their gift. That was their burden. That was their curse. The prophets were always paying attention. Listen to Heschel one more time. I love this guy. The prophet is a man who feels things fiercely. God has thrust a burden upon his soul, and he is bowed and stunned at man's fierce greed. Prophecy is the voice God has lent to the silent agony. Please pay attention to this final phrase. God is raging at us, in the prophet's words. You see, the prophets really do speak for God. They see what God sees. They know what God knows. They feel what God feels. And we omit our reading of the prophets at grave peril to our own souls and the well-being of this world that matters so much to God. That's why we read the prophets. This is a big deal to God. This is a big deal. Now, how should we respond to what they say. What should we do? Should we just be paralyzed this morning by the immensity of the injustice all around us? Because, come on, it's way more than I can fix. Should we just sit around doing nothing? Just feeling overwhelmed by the guilt and maybe by our own complicity? The prophet Micah is our fearless hero of today. The prophet Micah sums up the response God is looking for in perhaps one of the greatest passages in the Old Testament. Today we are not going to look primarily at the person, the man himself. We are going to look at some of his most important words. It's the only statement that I'm going to ask you to carry away with you today. Because if you grasp this one thing, if you grasp this one statement, you grasp the heart of all the prophets. Scholars tell us this. This is the heart of all the prophets, all 17 books, fearless heroes, every one of them. This is what Micah says. If you'd like to turn in your e-Bibles or in your hard copies, Micah chapter 6. In view of all the prophetic passion that he lays out early in the book, towards the end in chapter 6, he says this in verse 6. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with 1,000 rams, with 10,000 rivers of oil? And watch him, he keeps upping the ante. Shall I give my firstborn for the sin of my transgression, the firstborn of my body for the sin of my soul? That was being done all around in Israel, and sometimes even within Israel when people gave in to idolatry. But Micah says, no, none of that, not the firstborn. And then Micah writes one of the most magnificent statements that has ever been uttered in the world. Please pay close attention. He has shown you, O man, O woman, O young person, O child, he has shown you what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly before your God. That, my friends, is one of the greatest statements that has ever been made. And I think about what would happen if in this world, in this state of California, if in this room at Woodside Church, if we just did those three things. I want us all to carry this away, so would you please repeat this last sentence with me, starting with the word to do. I will say it first, and then I want you to just say it with me. Can you all do that? I'd like for you to participate. I'll say it first. To do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly before your God. Would you say it with me? To do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly before your God. Three things, Micah says. Three simple things. Everybody can do them. Everybody can do them. And you know what they are, so don't sit there and pretend, Micah says, that you don't. You can act confused, like you're really not quite sure what's needed, you know? He has shown you, O man, O woman, O young person, O child, he has shown you. There's no doubt. No doubt. It's very clear. God has been playing on this. Three things. First of all, do justice. Think for a moment at how mad you might become when somebody treats you unfairly. Think about it. Maybe get an example in your mind, a recent incident. Maybe somebody cut you off on the freeway. Somebody says something to you that you didn't deserve. Dave Hagler, a former referee and umpire, tells an interesting story, kind of a justice story. I like this story. It was in the LA Times a number of years back. This is what he writes. I was driving too fast in the snow in Boulder, Colorado. A policeman pulled me over and gave me a speeding ticket. I tried to talk him out of it. Anybody here that's ever done that? I tried to talk him out of it, telling him how worried I was about my insurance going up and what a good driver I've been. He told me that if I didn't like it, then I could just go to court and complain about it there. First game of the next baseball season, I'm umpiring behind home plate. The first batter up is that very same policeman. I recognized him. He recognizes me. He asked me, "How did the thing with the ticket go?" And I turned to him and said, "You better swing at everything." We hate it when somebody treats us unfairly, don't we? At work, in our families, in our neighborhood, at school. God says simply, do justice. Get as energized about it when somebody else is the victim of injustice as when you are. Have a passion for justice. And in particular, have a passion about injustice to those that others and you might be inclined to just simply overlook because it's rampant in this world, isn't it? This is from a great book, another favorite author of mine, Miroslav Volf, a Christian scholar. He quotes the story of a woman, and this is what he says. I'm sorry, this is kind of adult content. She was part of what was going on years back in Serbia and Bosnia. "I'm a Muslim and I'm 35 years old," she writes. "To my second son, I gave the name Jihad so he would never forget the pain of his mother. The first time I put my baby to my breast, I told him, 'May this milk choke you if you ever forget.' The Serbs taught me how to hate." She describes her work as a teacher, how the very people that she taught, these young people, the very young people that she cared for, suddenly became her enemies. She says this, "My student Zoran, who had been one of my favorites, the only son of my neighbor, urinated into my mouth as bearded hooligans held me down. They all laughed as he told me, 'You are good for nothing else, you stinking Muslim woman.'" We live in a world where large and small injustice is standard operating procedure. And God says, you be an agent of justice. You be passionate about justice. May you never forget this. I can't correct all the injustices in the world, but I can do something. I can notice, I can read, I can know what's going on in the world around me. I can pay attention to the corporations and the countries and the companies and the churches and how they behave. I can pray and I can ask God to help me treat others fairly. I can have the courage to stand up for people when they're treated unfairly in my little world. in my school, in my office, in my neighborhood, in my church. And I, who have so much more than those in need, I can give a little bit of what I have. I can give more and more to what I have to people who have no food and no home and no hope. I don't understand much about the church. And somewhere along the line, somehow, in at least some of our churches, we forgot about God's passion for justice. And we end up talking about a lot of other stuff. We don't center in on what Micah said when it comes to justice. Number two, love, kindness. God says next. The word Micah uses is a very rich word. It's chesed. You have to kind of with it. It's the Hebrew chesed. It's used most closely in the Old Testament, and it's associated with God's loving kindness that flows out of primarily and is expressed in his covenant of love. It is a love that always seeks to express itself in action, never confined to simply a feeling. Chesed. In a town called Paradise, California, where my wife and I raised our three children, there once lived a young man named John Gilborn. When John was 5 years old, he was diagnosed with Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. It's a genetic, progressive, cruel disease. He was told that it would eventually destroy all of his muscles, and in 10 more years, it would take his life. Every year, John lost something. 1 year, it was the ability to run. The next year, he couldn't play sports with the other kids. Another year, he could no longer walk straight. All he could do was sit back in his wheelchair and watch others play. He's written a manuscript of his life. It's an amazing work. He writes that junior high, right, was perhaps the hardest era of his life. Junior high is difficult for almost everybody. I suppose Tony Campolo once said, maybe he's right, maybe the old Roman Catholic theology is spot on. There really is something that's called purgatory. It's junior high, he says. It's a place between heaven and hell where you're made to go suffer for your sins. But John was bullied there, and he was humiliated until he was afraid to go to school. And nobody stood up for him, maybe because they were afraid. There were other moments in his life. One year when he was a kid, he was named the poster child for muscular dystrophy in the state of California. And so he flew to Sacramento. He was ushered with his mom into the governor's office for a private meeting. The governor, not our current governor. The governor had this big glass jar of candy on his desk. He told John to dig in, and John looked at his mom, who said, well, it was okay to only take one piece. But the governor said, no, I'm governor, and John should do exactly what he said. So he stuffed his pockets full of candy. And then that night, the NFL sponsored a fundraising auction dinner at which John was the special guest. Players let him hold up their huge Super Bowl rings. Some of you have seen some of those, how opulent they are, which almost went up to John's wrist. And when the auction began, one item especially caught John's attention. It was a basketball signed by every member of the Sacramento Kings. John got a little carried away because when the ball was being bid, he raised his hand. And as soon as it went up, his mom pulled it back down. John said, astronauts have never felt as many G's on as my wrist did that night. the bidding for that basketball went on, and it kept going up. It rose to an astronomical level more than anything else, even though it was not a particularly valuable item at the auction. And eventually, one guy named a figure that absolutely stunned the entire room. Nobody else could match it. He went to the front and he collected this wonderful prize that cost him so much. But instead of returning to his seat, the man walked directly across the room and placed this basketball that had been signed by every member of the Sacramento Kings in the thin, small hands of a boy who had admired it so intently. He put the ball in hands that would never dribble down the court, never throw the ball to a teammate on a fast break, never fire it up from three-point range. Have you ever bought a basketball for anybody lately? Have you just gone out of your way to serve someone for no reason at all? Maybe to give food to people who need it, or maybe play with kids who, like my grandkids and your kids and grandkids, deserve to be played with, but so often are not. And to serve people who don't get served very much in this world. You can spend some time of just about any day of the week doing that. And it's a chance to love kindness. And maybe some of you are already doing that. If you are, bless you. That's supposed to be the way of life. And it starts with the first step. If God is prompting you to take that step today, I hope you say yes. I hope you say yes to God. Then finally, number three, as we close, walk humbly, Micah says, before the Lord our God. I think this phrase probably has very special meaning to Micah, because I think it's hard work to be a prophet and not get all self-righteous about it, right? Has anyone here experienced maybe someone in the church who actually enjoys going around and correcting people? Any of you? There is a kind of person who loves to pass judgment. Oftentimes it's in a spirit of arrogant superiority, which they often cover up by just saying, well, that's my spiritual gift. Have you ever experienced that before? Anyone here? There's a very important theological distinction between being a prophet and being a jerk. Because what burns most deeply in the heart of a true prophet is not anger, but it is love. And when that happens, when people do justice and love kindness and walk humbly before the Lord our God, Micah says in his magnificent last chapter, in the closing words to his book, he says, and on that day, the nations will see. Not just Israel, not just people in Palestine, not just people in that part of the world. No, the nations will see. All people will see. They notice what God sees. Listen to Micah's words. Nations will see and be ashamed. And they will come trembling out of their dens and turn in fear to the Lord our God. For who is a God like you who pardons sins and forgives transgression? You will have compassion on us and hurl all our iniquities into the depths of the sea. Who is a God like you? Micah says, nobody. And what does this magnificent God want? What does this magnificent God require of you? What is it that is most important to him? He's made it crystal clear. You can try to fog it up if you want. You can try to pretend that he didn't say it and be confused. You can ignore it and you can walk away in silence. But that will not hold up one day. God has made it clear through the prophet Micah, do justice and love kindness and walk humbly before the Lord our God. Let's stand together as we pray.